this is Mary Wilson of the Supremes, and you're listening to my friend Mike Miller on the Harmony Street Show, and we just have so much fun, my baby love, me and Mike Miller. Woo!
Hey, Mike, John Mathis.
Hey, John, how are you?
I'm okay, thanks. It's Johnny Mathis, and you're listening to my good friend Mike Miller on the Harmony Street Show.
Hi, this is Terry Stewart, CEO of the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame in Cleveland, Ohio. And you're listening to my good friend Mike Miller on one of my favorite shows, the Harmony Street Show.
Hi, this is Mike Miller, and you're here with me on the Harmony Street Show, and it's my ultimate pleasure to have as my guest the legendary, the immortal Mr. Jimmy Rogers. How are you, Jimmy?
I'm good, Mike. I'm good, thanks.
It's such a thrill to spend time with you because over the years, every record that you ever recorded found its way to my heart. I mean, starting from the beginning and all through those wonderful hits.
Well, you know, I was lucky. On the first time I was in a studio, the major studio, it was with Army Call, and it was the first song I ever recorded.
Wow.
Can you imagine? I walked in as a kid and recorded it in a couple of hours and walked out. I didn't even have a contract with Roulette at that time.
Wow, that's amazing. You were born where, Jimmy?
I was born in Washington State in a little town called Camas, Washington, which is close to Vancouver, Washington.
Wow, that's about as far away as you can get from where I am, and I'm in Wellington, Florida. So if you draw a diagonal line all the way through the United States, I think Washington State, where you are, where you were at that time, is about as far away as you can get and still be in the United States.
Well, it's a great place. I lived on the Columbia River, and my brother and my father and all of our family fished the Columbia Rivers up there, and all of them, steelhead and salmon. All the time. We lived kind of in the woods, and so I was raised with dogs and fishing and hunting I never did hunt, but I sure like to fish.
Wow.
And I go up there all the time. My brother's up there now. I sold my places up there because I'm never there, but my brother's still there.
Wow. Did you have a musical family? Did you come from a musical family?
Well, not really. My grandfather on my mother's side was German, and my grandmother was Cherokee Indian. In the old days, and my grandfather could really sing, but my brother doesn't sing at all. My brother can't even play the radio. And none of my family sings at all except me. Now I've got five children altogether.
Wow.
They're not children anymore, but my oldest girl, boy, she can really sing. She's a national. She was singing background for Kenny Rogers for quite a while.
Fabulous.
And my oldest boy is a singer, and my granddaughter is a singer, and so, you know, they're getting it from me now.
Well, they're carrying on the legacy. I mean, who can blame them? Now, when you were younger, I'm sure you found the radio. Who did you listen to? Who really sparked you musically when you were younger? What did you listen to?
Well, we were poor. We were really poor people. 1933, I was born, and that was the Depression days, and nobody had any money, so we didn't have a radio for a long time.
Uh-huh.
When we finally got one, in those days, it was sort of the Ian Molly and the Great Gildersleeve and just, you know, all the old-timers, and you didn't hear too much. We heard music, but I don't remember. Bing Crosby was my mother's favorite. But when I got to be a teenager, of course, a friend of mine had a record player. I didn't have one. And I'd go to his house, we'd play records. And I loved the Frankie Lane was one of my favorite guys. I became addicted to Frankie Lane with Mule Train and all those great hits that he had. And I could sing along with all those people. You know, I could always sing. I only remember not being able to sing.
Right.
I've got perfect pitch, and so I never get out of, you know, and it's very easy for me. I used to do everything in one take. You know, I did it. It's Honeycomb in just a couple of takes.
Wow.
And it's a, I walk into the studio and do an album in 6 hours.
Wow, that's fabulous. So really and truly, the band made more mistakes than you did.
Well, we couldn't make mistakes in those days.
Oh, yeah, I know.
We'd have to do them all over again. You couldn't make tracks then in 1957, but I recorded everything very fast. I was with the Roulette Records for a while with a lot of the hits, and then I went with Dot, and I was the A&R man for Dot, and we used to do an album, 12 songs in 6 hours. I'd go in at 6 o'clock and get off at midnight.
Unbelievable, because, you know, I've been a vocalist all these years, and I sung with a bunch of groups, and I sang with the Mystics for a while that did Hushabye, and I had one group, Harmony Street. I had three ladies backing me up, and they all had perfect pitch, and my ribs were always sore because they were always elbowing me, get it up there, kid, you know, because I have relative pitch, you know, because I play guitar, but, you know, perfect pitch, if you ask me to sing, a B flat, I'd have to think about it, so... You know,
at my age, I have to think about it. I've got a husky voice now, but I can still sing. I'm still performing. I'm doing the one-man concerts. I stopped to write music for a while. I'm writing animation for film, and right now I'm writing the script for a motion picture.
Right.
But now when I go on the road, I just do a one-man show. I go out and sit on a stool with my guitars.
Wow.
And sit with and talk to the audience and play songs and play the old records. If they want to hear the records, I play them on CD and I get everybody singing along with me. It's a great show. It's a wonderful show. I love it.
Well, I'm producing some shows down here in Florida, and I'm emceeing a big show coming up. And maybe at one point I can twist your arm and send you some plane tickets and get you to come to Florida. We can talk about that.
Okay.
I'll even get you somebody to babysit the dogs.
Well, no. My wife is a ballerina for all of her life. We've been married 35 years
Wow.
now. And my wife has worked on stage all of her life. And when I go out, she goes with me. And she works the sound for me. She's brilliant. And she also, when I'm producing shows, I produce shows in Branson for 12 years.
Yeah, I do know that. Now, you were on Arthur Godfrey's show, which not too many people can make that claim.
Well, you know, that was the same thing. I was in New York City, broke. That was before I recorded the Honeycomb. My first wife, who passed 20 years ago, and I broke. My old Buick go all the way to New York City, and we got there and we were broke, and I was walking up and down the street in New York with a guitar on my back trying to find a bar that I could go in and sing some songs and get a job.
Wow.
And I saw a sign that said the Arthur Godfrey Talent Show, so I went over one day and I saw a line of the entertainers there standing in line, or the bands were going in, so I went over and there was a band going in with a bunch of instruments, so I got in line with them and walked in. And then they saw a sign that said audition room, and I walked into the audition room. And, you know, you can't just walk in those places, but I did. And a lady came on the intercom there. I couldn't see her. She was behind a big glass window. And she said, "Can I help you?" And I said, "Yeah, I came to audition for Arthur Godfrey." And she said, "Well, what's your name?" And I told her. She said, "Well, we don't have you down here, Mr. Rogers." I said, "Well," she said, "we have John somebody here today." And I said, "Well, John couldn't make it today, so I'm here." And I sang a couple of songs, not only come, a couple of folk songs. I got on the Godfrey show and did a little song called The Fox and the Goose, which was an Oprah Live tune.
Wow.
And I won the Godfrey show. I made $750, and I paid my hotel, got in the car, and drove back.
Wow, that's a great story. I mean,
yeah, well, that's the same time I recorded Honeycomb. On the way back, I was going out of town. I stopped in at this little record place called Roulette down on 10th Avenue because my wife saw a sign, and I walked in. And there's some guy sitting there, and I carried the guitar in, and I said, "Can I sing to somebody?" And the guy said, "Sure, can you sing?" And I said, "Yeah." So I sat down, and one guy was typing, another guy was doing something else, and I sang Honeycomb and a couple of other songs, and he said, where'd you get that honeycomb song? I said, well, I got it in Nashville, Tennessee from a friend of mine. And he said, have you ever recorded? And I said, no. And the next day they took me down to Bell Sound, which
is wow.
Four-track studio. And in a couple hours, we had honeycomb recorded. I had no contract. And I got locked down the studio. I used to smoke, and I went outside to smoke a cigarette. And then they locked all the doors. It was nighttime.
Wow.
And I couldn't get back in.
Wow.
So I walked all the way back to the hotel because I didn't have any money, couldn't get a cab, and I didn't even know it. And I tried to call them for about a week, and nobody called me back. So I used their money from the Cosby Show. We drove all the way home, and I was washing my car out in front of my folks' house in Camas, Washington, and a disc jockey in Portland played honeycomb on the radio.
Unbelievable! You can't make this stuff up.
That's the first time I heard it was when this guy played it. And I ran in the house and got my folks and my wife when they came out. We stood around the car and said, my gosh. And they said, afterwards, the guy said, this kid's name is Jimmy Rogers. We understand he lives around this area. If anybody knows where he is or how to get a hold of him, have him call the radio station.
Wow.
Well, I called the radio station, and they said that Roulette Records is trying to find you. They don't even know where you are.
Wow.
Honeycomb, honeycomb. Well, it's a darn good life, and it's kind of funny how the Lord made the bee, and the bee made the honey, and the honey bee looking for a home. And they called it a honeycomb, and they roamed the world, and they gathered all of the honeycomb. In the one sweet fall, and the honeycomb from a million trips made my baby's lips. Oh, honeycomb, I won't you be my baby? Well, the honeycomb be my home. Got a hank of hair and a piece of bone, and made a walking, talking honeycomb. Well, honeycomb, I won't you be my baby? Well, the honeycomb be my home. What a darn good life when you got a wife like a honeycomb.
Honeycomb.
And the Lord said, now that I made a bee, I'm gonna look all around for a green, green tree. And he made a little tree, and I guess you heard popping. Well, he made a little bird, and they waited all around until the end of spring. I get every note that the birdies sing, and they put them all in the one sweet tone. For my honeycomb, oh, honeycomb, oh, won't you be my baby? Well, the honeycomb be my home. Got a hank of hair and a piece of bone, and made a walking, talking honeycomb. Well, honeycomb, won't you be my baby? Well, honeycomb, be my home. What a darn good life when you got a wife like honeycomb.
Honeycomb.
And the Lord said, now that I made a bird, I'm gonna look all around for a little old word. It sounds about sweet like a turtle dove, and I guess I'm gonna call it love. And he roamed the world, looking everywhere, we're getting love from here, love from there, and put it all in a little old part of my baby's heart. Oh, honeycomb, won't you be my baby? Well, the honeycomb be my home. Got a hank of hair and a piece of bone that made a walking, talking honeycomb. Well, honeycomb, won't you be my baby? Well, the honeycomb be my home. What a darn good life when you got a wife like honeycomb.
Honeycomb.
I'm going to send you a book when I give you my email, if you'll send me your address, I'll send you the book I've just finished called Dancing on the Moon. It's a total life story.
Absolutely, but only if you sign it.
Well, I'll sign it. I think they're going to do a movie with it, Mike. I've had quite a few meetings with people.
Wow.
Anyway, that's one of the stories.
Well, you know, I'll tell you something. That's a fabulous story. And little did you know that you were dealing with the notorious Morris Levy. So.
Well, you know, they were notorious for not paying anybody. And I was one of those people they didn't pay. But when I did ask for money, which I did all the time.
Right.
But they just said, look, we haven't paid you, but we're going to make you a star. So after 3 years, I quit. Roulette walked out, and
yeah.
they took me off of all the jukeboxes and put me out of business for a couple of years. But I had to wait 2 more years before I could go with another company that I wasn't done. And then A&M with Child of Clay, and some of those recordings. I think the things I did on A&M were just really nice.
Yeah. Well, you know, if you speak to Jimmy Merchant or Herman Santiago from the Teenagers and you mention Morris Levy's name, their eyes just roll around in their heads and they get filled with rage because, you know, Morris actually put his own name on Why Do Fools Fall in Love, and of course Morris didn't write a word. And they actually sued Morris's estate to get that back, and they won in Supreme Court. And then they lost the appeal because the appeal said that they had waited over the statute of limitations. So they won a multi-million dollar suit, and then they lost it, you know, shortly thereafter that. And it's a tragedy because a lot of the guys, you know, like Jimmy Keys from the Chords, who really wrote Shaboom and the White Group covered it, you know, they died penniless, and the record companies took all the money, and you know, of course, that's not fair.
Well, they took all my money, too, but what I did was I learned how to produce records.
Right.
And I learned the A&R stuff, and Donovan Brandt and I had a $250,000 euphonics board that I was working on down with Rodney Dillard. Rodney Dillard was a bluegrass group, and I worked together in Brandt. And so I got in the background of the music business, and did a couple of movies, and I did a lot of television. And right now I own a half-hour TV shows called The Folk World of Jimmy Rogers and things like that. So I got away from everybody and did my own thing, but they didn't pay. They just admit they would make a star out of you.
Right.
But they wouldn't pay them.
Well, I've done Branson, and let me tell you, there's an awful lot of talent there. There were guys, you know, there are young kids singing in Branson, singing the hits, and some of them are fabulous. You don't realize how much talent there is in this country. But, of course, then you get into American Idol and The Voice and all of that. And then sometimes I don't have a good feeling about it because I think they exploit a lot of these kids. And some kids go home with their tail between their legs and they're really talented kids and they kind of take the starch out of them. But, you know, that's how it is now in the modern age. It's all different.
Well, you know, my youngest girl can really sing. She's 24. She's gorgeous.
Right.
And she went to one of those, in L.A., it was a big football field where they were having these kids go, and I forget which TV show it was for, but it was for a big one. And they didn't want her to sing with a band or anything. She just walked out and sang about four bars of a song. They said, thank you, next. They never even let her finish the song, and she's a good little singer.
Right.
And gorgeous. But those things, I don't know. But I do know that they're pretty rough for kids.
Yeah.
What I did is I just got the guitar on and sang for everybody. You know, everybody I met, you know, I would just ask them if I could sing a few songs. When I was in the Air Force before I recorded Honeycomb, I was in Korea during the war. And I had an old guitar in my place where I was staying part of the time offline. And at Christmas time, I would get the guitar out and sit on a footlocker in the dark and sing Christmas songs. And all these big old rough guys they'd start crying, you know, sitting on the ground floor. And when I came back, I worked in a little bar. I played piano in Nashville for $10 a night at the Club Unique in Printer's Alley, and singing for like 8 hours a night, playing piano, playing guitar, and singing. And that's why I heard the song Honeycomb. I didn't write Honeycomb.
Right.
It was recorded by a country singer named Georgie Shaw. And Georgie didn't have a hit on it, but I took it and speeded it up and made the hit. But you know, I had a rough time. I could only make $10 a night and 3 drinks, but that was about it. I didn't know that I was ever going to get a chance to really get into a studio because my parents never had money. None of us did. And so I had the opportunity to help my mom after my father passed away and put her in a cabin on right off the Columbia River where the fishermen called her Mom Rogers. She'd fix pies and cakes for them when they were fishing.
Wow.
She lived a great life. After that, I was able to help her, you know, which was cool.
Well, here you are, and you're a young guy in your early 20s, and all of a sudden you have the number one record, gold record, for weeks and weeks and weeks and weeks, and all of a sudden you look up, and you know, they couldn't find you, but once they found you, here you are doing the Paramount, the Brooklyn Fox, the Ed Sullivan Show, the Dick Clark Show, and you just got thrown right into the firestorm very quickly.
Yeah, that was hard too, because I didn't have any stage experience, and I was pretty nervous. Jerry Lee Lewis and I were touring a little bit, and Jerry was a wild man, and I was always so quiet. Right. I remember we were in front of a camera on the Dick Clark Show, and they put the camera on and said, Jimmy Rogers, and they go to Jerry Lee, and so on. They put the camera on me, and I smiled and waved, and they put the camera on Jerry Lee, and he stuck his finger in his nose and picked his nose and on camera. And, you know, I was, Buddy Holly and I roomed together at the Paramount Theater upstairs in a dressing room. The Crickets were right next door.
Right.
And Buddy and I used to sit and play guitars and sing in our dressing room waiting to go on stage. And Buddy and I were great friends. So when he got killed, I never got on another small airplane.
Wow. So I guess you did a lot of shows with my neighbor, Dion.
Well, you know, I think I did a couple of shows with Dion. I'm trying to remember in my book, to get all the discography from everybody I worked with. I was fortunate that I wrote a bunch of diaries, about 20 years of diaries.
Right.
And I'm sure I worked with Dion. I can't remember exactly where.
Right.
But I love Dion and the Belmont. They were great.
Yeah, well, Dion's still going strong. He lives not far from me in southern Florida, and I run into him all the time, and he's still being creative. And he's Dion, what can I tell you?
I just had my 80th birthday, but I'm down to 165. I'm in great
Wow.
And I feel terrific. I could still wear the same clothes I was wearing 40 years ago. And I'm still doing shows, and I'm still writing music and playing golf, and you know.
Well,
thank God. I'm doing well.
My wife said to me when she found out that I was going to spend some time with you, and my wife has a 57 Seaberg jukebox downstairs. When I met her, we're married 5 years, and I know her 7 years. She kind of saved my life, you know. It's my third and last marriage. So anyway, she had this jukebox, and Honeycomb is in the jukebox, as a matter of fact. And I will tell you that she said, I want you to tell him that I couldn't decide who was better looking, Jimmy Rogers or Jimmy Clanton. I really had trouble with that, you know, she said, because those were the two best looking guys on stage.
Well, when we get through with this conversation, I'm going to send you a DVD that I made in 1964 of Standards. Frank Sinatra called me the voice. Yeah, he said, Jimmy, you're the voice. You're a three-octave voice with a
wow.
great record. So Sinatra and I got along really well.
Wow.
And so I went into the studio, on the studio I was working in, and I recorded 16 standards, moving in light from one light to another, changing clothes and going in and doing another song.
Mm.
And I think this is the best thing I've ever done on camera. Really good.
Wow.
I think you'll like it. I brought tears to my eyes because it was so good to look at that after all these years. You know, I never took pictures of other artists, and I never got, I was always shy.
Right.
And I did get Buddy Holly's signature. I still have it. And I had a pair of his shoes, and they're out someplace in storage right now. I picked up, in the dressing room, because he left them somewhere, and I was going to give him the shoes, and then when he got killed, of course.
Wow.
I was in the hospital. I was supposed to be on that tour, that winter tour.
Wow.
I had walking pneumonia, and I went to the hospital for a while. I was in the hospital when he got killed.
You never know how life is going to work out. I mean, it's amazing.
Yeah. You know, years ago I had 3 brain surgeries, as you probably know, and it took me a long time to get back on my feet.
Right. We can talk about that at one point if you would, but, you know, I wanna go back and talk about Kisses Sweeter Than Wine. I mean, you know, when you think about Jimmy Rogers' tunes, every one of them was a smash hit home run, and there are not too many guys that came from that genre that can actually say that. I mean, Kisses Sweeter Than Wine, tell me how that came about.
Well, the Kisses Sweeter Than Wine was originally recorded by an old folk group, by the Weavers.
Right.
And they did it real quiet, sort of like a dirge, in a sense, very slow, and with the bluegrass, feel, and not electric instruments at all. But I had an old Epiphone electric guitar that I bought in a pawn shop for like $50. I still got it.
Well, when I was a young man and never been kissed, I got to thinking it over how much I had missed. So I got me a girl and I kissed her, and then, oh Lordy, well, I kissed her again, because she had kisses sweeter than wine. She had kisses sweeter than wine. I told her we'd be so happy for the rest of her life. I begged her and I pleaded like a natural man. And in the whoops, oh Lordy, well, she gave me her hand, because she had kisses sweeter than wine. She had kisses sweeter than wine.
Sweeter than wine.
Well, we worked very hard, both me and my wife, for working hand in hand to have a good life. We had corn and was the father of twins, because she had kisses sweeter than wine. She had kisses sweeter than wine.
Sweeter than wine.
Well, our children ain't numbered just about four, and they all had a sweetheart knocking at the door. They all got married and they wouldn't hesitate. I was a whoops, oh Lord, the grandfather of eight, because she had kisses sweeter than wine. She had kisses sweeter than wine.
Sweeter than wine.
Well, now that I'm old and I'm ready to go, I get to thinking what happened a long time ago. Had a lot of kids, a lot of trouble and pain, but then whoops, oh Lordy, will I do it all again, because she had kisses sweeter than wine. She had kisses sweeter than wine.
I plugged it in and recorded, you know, songs like that one. But what I did was I would change keys after every verse and chorus, and I would come up a half step. Because I didn't have a bass player or a piano player or anybody with me, so in order to make it a little more exciting, I was playing open chord rhythm on guitar, thumb style, and that rhythm I would take it from one key to another, and sometimes I'd go up, as you know, three or four times till I hit a high note.
Right.
And it was such a different sound. I was lucky enough to have a recording sound. You know, recording voice.
Right.
The people, when they heard it, they knew who it was, and that was really instrumental in my being successful.
Right. Well, you know, modulating the tunes make them more exciting. The problem is sometimes, you know, you gotta start off in a real low key, you know, because by the time you get to the top, it's like, uh-oh. And let's talk about uh-oh.
Well, okay, I was the co-writer on "Oh, I'm Falling in Love Again." I was working with a couple of writers in New York that were connected with Roulette, and I didn't know they were going to steal it. But we were in a hotel room walking around trying to write a song, and I dropped the guitar case on its side, and I said, uh-oh, and one of the guys said, "Hey, let's do it." That was a great little sound. So we wrote "Oh, I'm Falling in Love Again" in about 2 hours. And that caught on. And after that, I did the old SpaghettiO commercials and everything else. And so that was a fun song.
Oh, I fall in love again. Oh, 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 oh. Many's the time I've been too kind. Many's the time I've been stung. Many a honey took all of my money, but that was when I was much younger. Made up my mind to be careful. Made up my mind to beware. I was all right until Saturday night. I met a gal with the goldenest hair. Oh, oh, I'm falling in love. Oh, 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 oh. I thought I wouldn't get caught again. Never in 100, never in 1,000, never in 1,000,000 years.
Never in 1,000,000 years.
She had the bluest of blue eyes. She had the cherriest lips. Shouldn't have kissed her, I tried to resist her, but one kiss and I was a goner. I couldn't run if I wanted. I couldn't run if I tried. Saw what I liked and I liked what I saw, and my heart went along for the ride. Oh, oh, well, I'm falling in love again. Oh, 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 oh. I thought I wouldn't get caught again. Never in 100, never in 1,000, never in 1,000,000 years.
Never in 1,000,000 years.
That was the end of my roving. Now that it's over, I'm glad. Through gallivanting, I got in the slam. I'm, oh, I'm a ring-a-ding daddy. Rocking the cradle at night time. Living and loving each day. Got me a wife, she's the light of my life. And when I kiss her good morning, I say, oh, oh, well, I'm falling in love again. Oh, 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 oh. I thought I wouldn't get caught again. Never in 100, never in 1,000, never in 1,000,000 years. Never in 100, never in 1,000, never in 1,000,000 years.
Never in 1,000,000 years.
Oh, oh.
Well, I liked about some of those songs. They were really happy and up-tempo and fun, you know, except for Secretly, which is really a great song. I love that song.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, that touches everybody's heart. And, you know, I remember every word to every one of these songs because, you know, here I am. I'm growing up. I'm listening to the radio. And every time Jimmy Rogers came on, people really gravitated to you. I don't know if you realize, if you stop the average baby boomer on the street and you mention Jimmy Rogers, I don't know if you realize how much people love you. I don't think you realize that.
Must I meet you in a secret rendezvous? Why must we steal away to steal a kiss or two? Why must we wait to do the things we want to do? Why, oh why, oh why, oh why, oh why? Wish we didn't have to meet secret. Wish we didn't have to kiss secretly. Wish we didn't have to be afraid to show the world that we're in love. Till we have the right to meet openly. Till we have the right to kiss.
the right to meet. Oh, Penny, till we have the right to kiss. Oh, Penny, we'll just have to be content to be in love. See.
Well, you know, I never, ever used my name to get on airplanes or tell people who I was or anything. I'm really kind of a hermit. You know, I stay pretty much to myself, but I'm good-natured, and I'm a really a good writer. I've written, I don't know how many songs I've written, but I've got about 300 or 400 songs that nobody's ever heard. And
wow.
Now I'm writing for different people. But I never thought much about it until recently. Now I have a website, which I'd like to give you my website.
Absolutely. Let's tell the world, because, you know, we want people to know where you are and know that you're safe and well.
Well, I've got all my old records on the website, and I've got the new DVD on the website, and Christmas songs on the website, and things like that. And I just started it, JimmyRogers.com. Yeah. That's it. And the name Jimmy is spelled with an IE, and Rogers has a B. But boy, if you could put that on for me, that would help a lot, because then I could be sending out my book to people and talking to them. So I like that. That's a good way for me to meet people.
Well, Jimmy, I can spread the word as much as you want, because, you know, it's like I say, there are, you know, when you're on stage with a lot of people, and I've been on stage over the years, you know, with a lot of the people that I was in awe of, you know, the Little Anthonys and the Dions and the Mary Wilsons and the, you know, all of those people. And, you know, still having done all those shows with those people, I still am in awe, but I have a short list of people that I really cherish. And you're one of them, I have to say. And you know, when I put it in my head to try to get in touch with you, I was really glad that I was able to get through.
I have a new agent. She's up in Washington State. She's a doll. And she's the one that I think that got a hold of you. And she said, Mike Miller wants to call you from Florida. You're a great friend. You've helped me a lot in the recording industry, and you know, of course, what it's like to be on stage, so you know what it's like. I got a call yesterday from people who want to order some books from me, and
right.
So I thought, I don't have a publisher, because publishers take like 70% of the book.
Oh, yeah.
What I'm doing is, when I go out on stage, first of all, you know, when I go out on stage, I just stand there, and people stand up for 10 minutes. It's amazing.
Yeah. Wow.
I just can't believe it, you know, but they're just out there and they line up forever, and they want to hear all those old songs. It's so great.
Well, of course they do. Are You Really, Really Mine?
Yeah.
Another smash hit.
And wear my graduation ring. It's too wonderful. It's too beautiful. It's a fantastic thing. Are you really, really mine?
Really mine.
Really mine. Will my lucky little star really shine? Really shine. Kiss me with feeling.
lucky little star. Really shine, really shine. Kiss me with feeling. Make my heart go reeling. Make me know that you are really, really, really mine.
Really, 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 are you really mine?
Well, I had six in a row, I think, with Mbambe and Are You Really Mine? And
Mbambe. Once I get to Mbambe, you can bet I will stay in Mbambe. That's where I'll settle down with the girl in the house on the hill on the way to Mbambe. I'll settle down with the girl in the house on the hill on the way to Mbambe. Jingling lie-o, jingling lie-o, jingling lie-o.
Then I did the Long Hot Summer. I did the Long Hot Summer in one take. I walked in the studio at 20th Century Fox with a big orchestra, and they had been rehearsing for 3 or 4 hours, and I sang and did it in one take, and the engineer said, come on in and listen. I said, let me listen. I said, well, what do you think? He said, I don't think you can do it any better. I said, okay. Walked out, you know.
Gently stirs all the trees, and a bird wants to please my ear. The long, hot summer seems to know what a flirt you are, seems to know your caress isn't mine to possess. How could someone possess a star? But you may long for me long before the fall, long before the winds announce that winter's come to call. And meanwhile, I'll court you. And meanwhile, I'll kiss you. Meanwhile, my lonely arms will hold. So slowly moves along.
I didn't know, really, it was so much fun for me that I was working, of course, but I really didn't know that was hard to do. Because I was always so good at it, I could always sing. I can't remember when I couldn't sing.
Right. The song English Country Garden. Tell me about that song.
Well, I was cleaning out a closet in my first wife. We were going somewhere, and I was cleaning out a closet, and I found a little songbook in the closet that I picked up somewhere. And I read the lyrics, you know, how many kinds of sweet flowers grow in an English country garden. Bobby, you know, and I knew all the lyrics as I started looking at it. And I took the guitar and sat down, and I learned the melody, and I started playing it just for fun. And I recorded it. It wasn't a big hit here, but it was a great little song. It became a hit in England, and also in Australia. Like on that, the world I used to know, written by Rod McEwen, was a big hit in Australia.
The world I used to know someday some old familiar rain will come along and know my name, and then my shelter will be gone, and I'll have to move along. But till I do, I'll stay a while and track the hidden country of your smile. Someday the man I used to be will come along and call on me. And then because I'm just a man, you'll find my feet are made of sand. But till that time, I'll tell you lies and chart the hidden boundaries of your eyes. Someday the world I used to know will come along and bid me go. Then I'll be leaving you behind, for love is just a state of mind. Till that day, I'll be your man and love away your troubles if I can. But till that day, I'll be your man and love away your troubles if I can. In the world
Once a jolly swag man sat beside a billabong under the shade of a coolabah tree, and he sang as he sat and he waited while his billy boiled. You'll come along, sing Matilda with me. And he sang as he sat and he waited while his billy boiled. You'll come a waltzing Matilda with me.
You'll come a waltzing Matilda with me.
Down came a jumbuck to drink beside the billabong. Up jumped the swagman and grabbed him with glee. And he sang as he laughed and he tucked him in his tucker bag. You'll come a waltzing Matilda with me. Tucked him in his tucker bag. You'll come a waltzing Matilda with me.
You'll come a waltzing Matilda with me.
Down came the stockman riding on his thoroughbred. Down came the troopers.
One, two, three.
Now where's the jolly jumbuck that you've got in your tucker bag? You'll come a waltzing Matilda with me. Jolly jump buck that you got in your tucker bag. You'll come a waltzing Matilda with me.
Come a waltzing Matilda with me.
Up jumped the swagman and jumped into the billabong. You'll never take me alive, cried he. And his ghost may be heard as you walk inside the billabong. You'll come a waltzing Matilda with me. And his ghost may be heard as you walk inside the billabong. You'll come a waltzing Matilda with me. You'll come a waltzing Matilda with me.
My waltzing Matilda was number one in Australia. The world I used to know was that, and I have another called English Country Park, which we just talked about. There was a hit. I had quite a few, and I had more hits, I think, in Australia than I did here.
Right. Well, that's interesting. One thing that some people have a little bit of trouble with when they think about Jimmie Rodgers, they say, well, was he a pop singer? Now, wait a minute. Was he a country singer? Now, wait a minute. Was he a rock and roll idol? Well, wait a minute. Was he... let's see. Was he a rockabilly singer? And the truth is, I would say all of the above.
Yeah, you know, I really don't have trouble with any of those styles. And that kind of hurt my career a little bit. You know, like most of them just stayed with one thing. But I really didn't like to be called a rock and roll singer because I wasn't. You know, I knew Elvis Presley and all those guys, but I was never really rock and roll. I the closest I ever came was, you know, Honeycomb and Kiss the Sweet One. So
right.
Those were up to me, but the kids came anyway, and so did the adults. You know, they would line up for miles when we were out there, you know, recording stuff, and it didn't seem to matter. But Dick Clark told me, he said, I couldn't take you on my tours because you weren't a rock and roll guy.
Uh-huh.
You just weren't. So sometimes that hurt me, but I tried to do too many things too. I was producing records and writing music and writing poems and singing all kinds of songs, and I'd sit down with the guitar and just sing for hours when I was rehearsing. Well, I worked hard. By myself, I worked really hard on my music, and I never talked about it very much. But you know, right now, the people really treat me great. They really do. They're really sweet.
Well, you're part of their very being. I mean, you know, when you have certain songs that are ingrained in your head and you grow up, they become part of your psyche and they become part of your good times and they become, you know, part, they're in your heart. So, basically, people are walking around with those songs in their heads for all those years, and it brings them to a good place when they hear them again, and to hear your name, you know, makes them smile.
Well, you know, when you remember the song, It's Over.
Of course.
The Elvis, you know, recorded that song before me. When I wrote It's Over in New York, I was with the Tijuana Brass at the Carnegie Hall and working there, and I came out at night and it was raining. And there was a girl standing out in front, I guess, waiting for a cab, and she was crying, and my drummer was with me, and I walked over to her, and I said, "Are you okay, honey?" She said, "Yeah." And she said, "I just saw the show." I said, "Well, why are you crying?" She said, "Well, my fiance was supposed to meet me tonight at here for the show, but he didn't come, and he told me that if he didn't show up, that he wanted to break up with me," and she was crying. She said, "You know, Mr. Rogers, it's just over."
Huh.
And so Bobby and I put her in a cab, and I went back to my hotel, and I woke up in the middle of the night, got up in my shorts and a t-shirt, pulled the guitar out of the case, and I wrote It's Over in about an hour.
Wow.
And then when I came back to L.A., I was doing a session with, I don't know, I can't remember some of the people, but one of the guys walked in that night, one of them asked me if I'd written a song lately, and I said, "Well, I just wrote this one." It's a singer, I'll think of his name in a minute. And I said, "Let me just do a demo." Glenn Campbell was on the session that night with me.
Uh-huh.
Glenn had not singing, he was playing guitar with me in studio.
Right.
So Glenn and I sat down and the recording It's Over as a demo. I made two takes. And I took that song home at 3 o'clock in the morning and I put it on my little one-sack recorder and I listened to it on a quarter inch. And I thought, you know what? I'm going to release this just the way we did it, Glenn Campbell and I.
Well.
And that was the hit.
Time were not a moving thing, and I couldn't make it stay. This hour of love we share would always be. There'd be no coming day to shine a morning light, make us realize our night is over. When you walk away from me, there is no place to put my hand, except to shade my eyes against the sun that rises o'er the land. Watch you walk away, somehow I have to let you go. Now it's over. If you knew just how I really feel, you might be turning yet. There are so many times that people have to love and then forget. Though there might have been a way, I have to force myself to say it's over. I turn my back, turn my collar to the wind, move along in silence, trying not to think at all. I send my feet before me, walk the silent street before me. It's over. Time were not a moving thing, and I couldn't make it stay. This hour of love we share would always be. There'd be no coming day to shine a morning light, make us realize our night is over. It's over.
Yeah, oh, absolutely. And Glenn, you know, Glenn did a lot of things. He was in a lot of places.
Well, he's a great guy, and, you know, I'm praying for him right now, and yeah. I don't want to talk about it. I know he's having some problems,
right.
But health problems, but Glenn could really sing. He was a writer, a flat-out singer. He was really good. I didn't know he could sing at the time. But, boy, and he could, we'd get him in the studio, because right before I was producing records, I tried to use Glenn, because he would not read the music. In fact, as we used to take the music away from him, but he would learn the song as we were rehearsing, and then he would stand up.
Right.
And if it was up tempo, he would take off. He would take over, and he could really play.
Right. Yeah. Well, some of the best studio musicians don't read, you know, and it's just, you know. And I hate when a producer gets a specific guitar player and then starts telling him how to play the lick. And I always used to say to myself, if you're going to tell the guy how to play it, then you don't need him. It could be anybody there. You know, let him do what he does.
Yeah, turn him loose. You know, we used to let it go. See, I don't like click tracks. I never used to, and I never would.
Right.
A click track in studio holds you back.
Right.
If you're jamming in the studio and everybody's having fun, you're going to make hit records when you get serious. And if it starts to move ahead just a little bit, not too much, but
right.
It starts to play into the feel, don't mess with it. Don't fix it if it ain't broke. But right now, everything's click tracks with both of these people. And it's like, and if you take a cuckoo clock and try to sing with the beat of it consistently, it'll slow you down to you lose all the feel.
Yeah, no, all the emotion is out of it. Hey, listen. Now you have Pro Tools, and if you like a verse or whatever, you just cut and paste it into the next one. You don't have to sing it again. And, you know, it gets to be a little robotic, and it's, you know, digital is just a little bit colder than analog, you know.
Well, we call it comping. You know, we comp the record. I can take a guy in who truly can't sing, or a girl, and first of all make a track, and then put 10 vocals down, and then pull similar sounds and voice, vocal words, and everything else down to the track, and I can hear it. I've done it so much, and I can hear it on the radio. Boy, if you don't edit that back in really smooth, you can pick it up. And some of those people can't really sing live.
I went about 10 years ago to an Olivia Newton-John concert, and she had about 23-piece orchestra. She had 5 or 6 vocalists behind her. And I never realized how many hits she had, but she popped them out one after another. And I got backstage, and I said to her, I said, man, you were so on top of your vocals. I mean, you weren't under any of your notes. You were just, like, right on top of all of it. I said, wow. I said, you're really in good vocal shape. She looked at me, and she said, we use pitch correction. I said, okay.
Well, I love her. I really like her sound.
Yep.
She's got the sweetest sound. And I've never met her. I've been in Australia 12 times. And
right.
I've been through her hometown a few times.
Right.
But, you know, I'm lucky that I didn't have to. Well, you know, we didn't have anything on stage to help us with sound.
Nope.
We didn't have something on stage, not for the audience. We had just two speakers.
Right.
But I didn't have anything else on sound. The one speaker on one side, one on the other.
That's true.
And now they've got all these speakers on stage, and they're all wired. And I don't say it doesn't work. It does work, but for some reason, I don't see the freedom in it that we used to have.
Yeah.
Boy, you would get Jerry Lewis on stage and get him going, you don't put a click track on that cat.
Nope. I hear you. You know, we do it sometimes recording a cappella, because what happens is a lot of times, you know, when you start off in G, you know, singing a cappella, if you don't have a little guitar track or whatever, you wind up in F sharp or whatever. And, you know, and for recording, it's that one guy that's dragging you down, you know.
Well, when I was about 10 10 or 11 years old, my mom got me a little Arvin radio, a little white radio. Uh-huh. And at night, my brother and I had to sleep in the same room. When he was 4 years older than me, he'd be out on a date or something, and I'd be, after homework, I'd go to bed, and I'd take this little radio, and I'd plug it in under the bed, and I'd put it under a pillow.
Right.
And I'd go to sleep with music. Uh-huh. And I'd be a while ago, what was my favorite? I wasn't any kind of music, but I would listen to songs and go to sleep listening to music. I think that when I was in my mother's tummy, I was listening to music. When I was first able to sing, they used to, when fishing, my mom and dad would tie a stringer on my belt and hook it to a tree, and they'd put me by the bank, and I'd sit there and sing all day.
And
I never took a singing lesson from anybody. Well,
and they didn't say you were scaring the fish?
No. I never took a lesson. I could play piano and cool. I play guitar, and I never took a piano lesson, even though my mother was a teacher, and wow. I never took a guitar lesson.
Wow. That's you know, I mean, so you're the total musical guy. Child of Clay, let's talk about that tune.
Yeah, that was written by Tony Mottola. Ernie Mascara, I believe, wrote that.
Uh-huh.
Ernie's down in Florida somewhere. He wrote a lot of sort of rock and roll hit songs. But I signed with A&M, and a guy by the name of Stanton was a producer, and he came to me and he had heard this song, Child of Clay, and at first I turned it down. I thought, well, this has got like a sort of a drug content in the lyric. But the more I listened to the demo, I thought, you know what, I'm going to do this because it's such a great lyric. So A Child of Clay turned my career around. My biggest hit in the 60s was It's Over, in the 64 or whatever. But until A Child of Clay came out, it didn't make the number one. But boy, that thing got a lot of play.
Right.
It's just a great song. I still do that in concert. I do Child of Clay every concert.
Into the darkness he was sent by parents who were ignorant. Tied down to his mother's strings, unable to be anything. Puzzled by the things he hears, his questions fall on their deaf ears. And the father, thinking work comes first, ain't got the time to quench a thirst. No, 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 no. Once he was a child, a beautiful child, a child of clay. Shaped and molded into what he is today. To blame for this child of clay. And going out into the street at night, the answers he may meet. With sick and twisted minds, he shares the searching questions his heart bears. And from the dregs the answers find their way into his supple mind. In time the planted seeds will grow into a twisted vine below. No, 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 no. Once he was a child, a beautiful child, a child of clay. But who
to blame for this child of clay. And now his aimless days begin to drift into sordid sin. And soon his dislike turns to hate as the stamp of life seals his fate. And so the night conceals his name, and the day sleeps off his shame. Deprived of love and rocked by fear of feeling that the end is near. No, 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 no. Oh, once he was a child, a beautiful child, a child of clay. Shaped and molded into what he is today. Tell me who is to blame for this child of clay. Once he was a child, a beautiful child, a child of clay. Shaped and molded into what he is today.
I'm actually leading up to this, and I know you get asked this a lot, so I'm going to go there anyway. Most people know that you took a leave of absence from singing, but they had no idea why. They had no idea where you went because they were playing your records and listening to you, and they really don't know the story. I know bits and pieces of the story, but if you would, maybe you can summarize for me what actually happened that night in 1967, and I know you've probably talked about it 100 times, but maybe you can tell us what your recollection is.
My first wife died from brain surgery. She had 3 brain surgeries from a car accident, and she died while I was in the hospital. When I got out of the hospital from 3 brain surgeries, so that we had 2 little kids. Of course, we still do, but what I was doing is I was working all day. I went and I was doing a motion picture for the It's Raining Ball. They wanted me to star in that motion picture, and I had several meetings in town. And my conductor and I had written a show called The World Through the Eyes of Children, which I still have, for stage. And my conductor came over, and we went over to Bob, an actor friend of mine by the name of Bob Coburn's house, and we were playing him that music that night of the show. And I wanted to get my wife a Christmas present. This was right at Christmas time, and so I was driving around, and we with them, and then we stopped at the Trader Vic's, I think it was, in Hollywood. And I don't drink, but I had one drink at the bar, and then I had some food, and I sat down, and we went to a party. We were up till about 2 o'clock in the morning with a bunch of people.
Right.
And my wife was in the hospital, and I wanted to get home. And so I took off in my car, and my conductor lived out by me, so he was following me on the freeway. It was about 2 o'clock or 3 in the morning, but I was sober. I don't drink, really. But as I was driving, the wind was blowing so hard that I was weaving all over the road, and I was driving really slowly. But I could see my conductor's lights behind me, and when I turned off the street called Rinaldi to go to my house, a car pulled up behind me after I turned off the freeway, pulled up behind me and blinked its lights. Anyway, I thought it was that guy behind me was Eddie Samuels, my conductor, and this guy walked up to the window, and like a dope, start on a little side street off the freeway. And I rolled my window down. This guy was standing there, and I couldn't, this great big guy, and he said, I'm a cop. But I thought it was because I was weaving on the freeway. The wind was blowing so hard. And I said, well, you don't look like a cop. You don't have a uniform. He said, I don't have to have a uniform. I'm a cop. And I said something else to him, and he hit me with a blunt instrument. We still don't know what it was, but he hit me so hard on the left side of my head that the brain went clear across and fractured and had a severe hematoma on the right side.
Wow.
And he also, when I got my arm up, he broke my arm. And then I remember being on the street and he was kicking me and he kept saying, "Don't die on me, you blankety blank. Don't die on me, you blankety blank." He kicked me the whole time.
Wow.
And he hit me so hard in my head that I ended up having three major brain surgeries, and they had to take the whole right side of my skull off.
Hmm.
The whole 29 squares of the bone.
Wow.
They took off the right side. And the first doctor didn't quite know what to do. He wasn't as trained as they had another doctor that my wife called, and Dr. Wilson, who was a great neurosurgeon. He came to the hospital. It wasn't his hospital. But he went in and he found what they call three subdural hematomas underneath was underneath the skull. And he had to cut the bone. They just had to do all kinds of things. They got to get the brain up. The brain was swelling underneath the scalp.
Right.
And they had to, you know, just cut pieces of bone off of me to get the brain to come up out of there.
Hmm.
And they said, this one doctor said, "You had about 3 minutes to live by the time I got to you." So then they just kind of cut the whole bone off.
Right.
And so I was in bed and didn't know anybody for a long time. I went down to 118 pounds and I couldn't talk or anything and couldn't see or anything like that. And when I wasn't supposed to live because they kept telling me, "You're never going to walk again or talk again, hardly." And then I had to write notes to everybody. But that was the end of my voice. And that was the end of my show.
Wow.
I struggled for, about 3 years trying to learn to do things. And I couldn't play the guitar or anything. I didn't know how to do anything. And then I was on the line for seizures. For 35 years, I was on double doses of Dilantin for having seizures.
Wow.
And I had seizures on stage. When I started working, I was really doing well again. And then I started having major seizures on stage in front of audiences, and I would collapse. And that was the end of my career. It just stopped. The business stopped, you know, getting me to work anywhere.
So it took a long, long time until your body adjusted and got back to some kind of semblance of order. And, you know, everything seeks its level, you know.
Well, you know, I'm a Christian, and I prayed about it constantly. And at Christmas time one night, my pastor of the church came over, and I was having really a rough time, not able to walk or anything. And they prayed about it, and the next day I started feeling better, and I got so I could get out of bed in a couple of weeks. And I prayed about it, and I felt like God put his arms around me that night. And I told my wife, so, you know, I think the Lord just touched me. I really feel different. And I ended up walking, and I had double vision. I couldn't see from all the medication. The double vision went away, and the steel plate was on my, that they put in, the last one stayed in.
Right.
And I ended up walking a little bit, and I got so I could run a little bit, and then when I was 55 years old, I ran from Westlake, California to the ocean, which is 14 miles of mountain.
Wow.
And then I was running 10 miles every other day in my 50s and 60s.
Wow.
So God's in my pocket, or I'm in his. And I don't have headaches or anything, and I don't have any problems. You know, sometimes I have to be a little careful because I've got a new bone growing back in my skull.
Well,
but I'm alive, and God's
really,
that's the deal. I had to go away, and the business never helped me really. I had to do it myself.
Wow.
I got in the truck with my wife and drove all over the United States. I owed so much money when I got so I could walk. and nobody would hire me. This is why they want to do a movie about me. So we took a big old truck, loaded it up with equipment, and we drove all over the United States, and I stopped in town to tell about Jimmy Rogers. And they booked me for a weekend, and I'd get on stage and make some money, and I'd go on to the next town.
Wow.
Yes, they had all those hits. And I paid back $120,000, to what I needed to pay back, taxes and things like that, by doing that. I booked myself after all those hits. I was painting houses, trying to make money, and so on. And so, you gotta be tough.
No, I understand, and you're not bitter.
No, I love the Lord. I'm not bitter.
Wow, I mean that's a great, great story. And you know, we don't have to go back and try to figure out who and what and whatever, because you know in your heart and your mind exactly what happened, and you know you don't have to explain it at this point. You just know that. You got through it, and you made it through, and it made you the Jimmy Rogers that you are today, for better or for worse. I mean,
well, you know, my kids, my oldest boy was died in a car when I ran to the ocean 14 miles, and he's 6'4" and weighed 220 pounds. I've got two boys that are over 6 foot. One of them 6'7".
Wow,
they're big kids, and they're great. All five of my kids are just wonderful people. My wife, Mary, was 35 years in the ballet. She's the living doll. She's an angel. And so I'm happily married. And you know what? I have a great life. I've got through the whole thing, but I couldn't stop. My dad told me one time, I've got to use a word I wouldn't ordinarily use, but I asked my dad, I said, "What do, Dad?" He said, "Jimmy," he said, "my dad was a boxer."
Right.
And he said, "You keep your right hand high and your ass off the floor."
Yeah, right, exactly.
That's all the advice he ever gave me. He was a little Irish guy, and Scotch-Irish. And his nickname was Tuffy because they used to fight in the ring and stuff on their dances when he was young. And he said, "You keep your right hand high and your ass off the floor." And that's in my book. I want people to get this book because I tell the whole story, Dancing on the Road, it's called, and it took me 5 years to write it, so if they want it, they can get it through the website. But they're talking seriously about doing a major motion picture, and I hope they do.
Well, I hope they do, too, because, number one, people will know that you're back. I mean, I talk to people sometimes. Even during the week, I said, you know, I'm going to spend some time with Jimmy Rogers, and they said, well, Jimmy Rogers, is he still around, or where is he, or is he gone? Is he, you know, I would say that some people know, but then some people don't know what happened, and some people don't know where you are, and those some people would be thrilled to know that you're alive and well, and would be thrilled to know the story and hear what you have to say.
Well, you know, I had a dear friend who had cancer down in Branson, Missouri, and he gave up. We played golf together, and he got, I found out he had cancer, and he had it for, and I was there 12 years, and he had it for about 3 years in a row. And he wouldn't go to the doctor, he wouldn't take care of himself, and I kept telling him, I said, "Don't quit. You don't quit." And he said, "Oh, I've lived a good life." And, you know, he just let himself die. You have to find out doctors, good doctors, if you can get them.
Right.
And do what they tell you to do. No matter what it takes. When they put the first steel plate in, it kept working its way through the scalp. And then they put in another one, put that out, put in another one, and boy, that was tough. And then for over the years when I've been married to Mary for so long, every once in a while, that plate would work its way through the skin and
right.
drain.
Right.
And they knocked me out and cut steel out of the side of my head and sewed me back up. I had about 20 surgeries like that in the last 3 years. So I've got an envelope full of pieces of steel.
Right.
For the last time I went in, they took the plate completely out, and the bone had grown all the way back. That 29-inch hole in my head, the bone grew back. And the bone doesn't grow back in adults. Children have three layers of bone. When they have accidents with an adult, the bone doesn't go back, but it did at me.
Well, so are you giving them fits at the airport now or not?
Well, I tell the audience sometimes, because I tell them a little bit, I said, well, I got a steel plate up here. I said, but I'm going to take a break. I've got a big magnet on the wall in there. I'm just going to hang on that magnet for a half an hour. I'll be right with you.
That's pretty funny. That's pretty funny.
But I believe in my faith. And I don't preach to anybody. I just have a lot of faith. And I believe in faith, and I believe in honesty. And, that's the main thing. We have to try. You know,
absolutely.
What.
You have to keeping on. And look, you have a legacy that is unbelievable, you know, with all the hit tunes that you've done, and you've touched an awful lot of people, and you worked with everybody in the business, you know, Bobby Darin, Paul Anka, Buddy Holly, Elvis, and all of the bigs, and you were on the top of the heap. And people have not forgotten that.
Well, I do know that one time that Elvis and I each had two records in the top 10. And I think for several months there that my records and his records are selling pretty good. But Elvis, of course, when he recorded It's Over, he recorded it, you know, just before he died. And I still get residuals from that song. And that was a long time ago when he passed away. And you know what? He was a good guy. I kind of felt sorry for him because he couldn't go anywhere. I couldn't go places. I mean, the kids would recognize me, but after I got hurt, I could go to restaurants and things, and people wouldn't recognize me too much. But Elvis couldn't go anywhere. You know, he just couldn't. And I think that's what killed him. You know, you can't.
Yeah.
He just whatever he was doing, he certainly wasn't healthy. And if he wanted to go to a movie, he'd have to rent the movie out. I had some of that. Quite a bit of it for a couple of years. I told Buddy Holly that I was going to quit. And Buddy, before he passed away, before he got killed, he talked to me in the dressing room. I said, I want to be a mechanical engineer in college. And I had just 1 year of college before I went to Korea. And I wanted to go back and finish my schooling, but then I recorded Honeycomb and I didn't have a chance. But Buddy talked me into staying. He said, you know, Jimmy, the music is really important to people. And I don't, as you say, I don't realize, but I get the sweetest letters from people all over the world. And, you know, sometimes it just brings tears to my eyes because you just don't realize how you can touch people with music.
Oh, absolutely. And look, most people don't know how many tunes you recorded. I mean, you've had over 30 albums, and that's an awful lot of recording time. I mean, there's a lot of Jimmy Rogers music out there.
Yeah. Yep. Actually, I gave them all away. I gave all those albums away. My wife had to buy them. She said, for Christmas, I'm going to buy all of your albums, get on the computer and order all the Jimmy Rogers albums. She bought like 4 sets of all of the albums.
Wow.
And it cost us about $1,000 to buy them all back so I could give them away.
I have a question for you.
Yes, sir.
What's your favorite Jimmy Rogers tune?
You know, I'll have to send you a song. It's called L.A. Breakdown. And L.A. Breakdown was a song that I don't know who wrote the song. But when I was in the hospital, first I was working with, which company was I with? Right after I left the Dot Records. I was recording with A&M, with Herb Alpert.
Right.
I was doing it, and I could really sing. You know, I've been through all that stuff, but I could really sing the Charles Clay album and the Windows of Your Mind album and those songs, but I could really sing. And one of the guys came in and was producing a record, the L.A. Breakdown, which was in the album. And I was singing it, and he came in. He kept telling me what how to sing the song, and I finally turned to him and I said, "I'm sitting down." And I said, "Look, do me a favor. I want you to go outside and don't talk to me about. Don't try to teach me how to sing."
Right.
Period. And this guy was a musician. I said, "I don't tell you how to play your instrument, and don't tell me how to sing." And he kept talking to me, so I sang LA Breakdown. And I put my jacket on because it was cold outside, and I just picked it up and did a Frank Sinatra. I walked out of the studio and never went back. That was my last song. That was the last one I recorded. LA Breakdown and Let Me In. I'm so lost on my own.
Wow.
LA Breakdown and Let Me In. It's my last chance. I'm coming home.
Wow.
And the reason I kind of is because when I was in the hospital, they wheeled me up to the top of the hospital in a wheelchair, and I could finally see out, and I couldn't ambulate, but they got me up there. They took me to the edge so I could look over, and I saw all these cars going by, and I was sitting up there in the dark with the nurses, two nurses, and I thought to myself, look at this, you know, I'm okay, I'm going to make it. I am going to make it, and I was just, and then I had been recorded, I had recorded that song, LA, Break Me Down and Let It Take Me In, and that's always been my theme song for me.
Wow.
On stage.
Wow.
LA Breakdown. If you keep in touch with me, I'll send you a copy of that.
Oh, of course I will. A Little Dog Cried, that's a very interesting title.
Yeah. Well, that was that roulette for Christmas, I think, right? That was. Now, I don't know what they did with that song. It's a recitation, and it didn't really sell. At least I didn't get paid for any of it, but I get it as a recitation of the music. And it was about a little dog, I think, that went to heaven. I've always wondered, I've prayed about this, I've always wondered if animals go to heaven. I think they do.
Right.
Because, Jesus is riding on a mule. So I know that animals must go to heaven. But that, The Little Dog Be Crying, I've got just one copy of that.
Well,
where did you find that record?
Well, I don't know that I have it, but I know of it. And you want to know something? Somebody has it, because I know record collectors that have everything. And they come up with stuff that people say, oh, my God, I don't even have a copy, and, you know, I recorded it, and I know there's somebody that has that. I just know it. That's how it works.
Yeah, I've got in my den, I've got, what, now, I've got 24 goals now, I think, over the years, sent for me from different places in the music business. Once in a while I'd get a gold record in the mail with a nice letter from some company that was selling records all over the world. but this house looks like a museum. We don't have a real big house. I don't want a big house. I like just a comfortable home.
Right.
And it looks like a museum when you come in, and my wife will, you know, I just keep telling her, why don't you put some of this stuff in the garage? But she won't do it.
But you don't put gold records in the garage. There must be some little corner, even if you hang them in the bathroom.
Well, they're nice to have. You can tell your audience, I'll tell them they're not real gold. They're beautiful, but
no,
they're not gold. And they don't play. You can't play them. So
yeah.
It's just a keepsake.
But it's the thought that counts.
Yeah.
How about duets? Have you done many duets?
You know, only on television. I've never recorded. Well, I recorded one duet with my daughter, my oldest girl in Nashville. I've got some copies of those, although those were never released because she didn't have a deal. But the only time I ever did duets, I did songs like with the Lennon Sisters and with the High Lows, where you'd have to. On my TV shows, where you'd have to put me in between the
right.
four harmonies because
right.
I could do it, but I never recorded anything with anybody else. That would have been fun.
Well, you did everybody's show, Patti Page and Perry Como and Bob Hope and George Burns and Mike Douglas and Merv and Steve Allen, bless his soul. And now, was it true that you were on This Is Your Life?
Yes.
Wow. See, so, I mean, you know, the legacy goes on and on and on. And you performed at the Academy Awards as well.
Yes, I did indeed. I'm sitting right next to Clark Gable, which is right up down the aisle from me. And just all these big stars. I was scared to death. I was just sitting there. Fred Astaire sat down right by me and talked to me for an hour. We were waiting for, you know, you saw wait in the theater while this was being fixed up. And Fred Astaire came over and started talking to me about my music. I couldn't believe it. And Cary Grant came to see me in Las Vegas. I was in Caesar's Palace. After I got hurt, I was working all the big places for a while. And Cary Grant came back to my dad's room and sat and talked with me for almost an hour and a half.
Wow.
Those kind of things.
Cary Grant. Jimmy.
What a guy. What a great guy. And so some of those big stars, you know, if you have that, I think you probably have an opportunity to be close to some of them.
Those are the freeze frame moments that never go away. And then, of course, I remember the Honeycomb commercial.
Oh, sure. And the Spaghetti-O commercial. And
yeah.
All of that. You know, I've written right now. I have the will to do the Eyes of Children up. I'm writing it for a stage show. And I've got 3 animated motion pictures almost finished with the script screenplays that I've been working on for the last 4 or 5 years. So I'm getting ready to set up a small company where I can do the storyboards for these and see if I can get them put out. So I'm really busy right now. I'm writing another book called The Seven Horsemen, and I'm writing The Seven Horsemen screenplay every day. I'll be writing it now for the next 3 months.
So you're staying very creative.
Yes, sir.
Which is what you need to do, because a lot of people, you know, you can retire, but then you really never retire. I know I have friends that have retired. They don't know what to do with themselves. So, you know, if you don't, you kind of dry up if you don't stay creative. And that's what I try to do, too. You know, I'm doing the radio show for the last 5 or 6 years, and I'm still out singing a little. I have the studio. I'm recording a little bit. And, you know, never had a hit, but did some great things. My Harmony Street group was the entertainment for Bill and Hillary at the 98 Christmas party at the White House and things like that. You know, so, you know, yeah, it's very cool. You know, it's fun. And I always say I'm a little tiny grain of sand on a big beach where a big fabulous beach, but I'm happy to be that one little tiny grain of sand, you know, because it's such a fabulous beach, you know.
Well, I tell you, I'm a grain of sand, too. You know, Mike, why don't you send me a few of those things? I'd love to hear you. I'd love to hear what you're doing, because I'm very interested in people. I was up mailing some things the other day, and there's a young kid there, and he was talking about being a writer. He said, I need some help, and I introduced myself to him, and I said, well, look. I said, why don't you some of your writing to me. He was about 25 years old. And
wow.
I'll take a look at it.
And you said, ask your grandfather who I am and he'll tell you.
No, I just said, my name is Jimmy Rogers. Uh-huh. You can look me up. So I guess he's going to give me some of this stuff. But I do. I look at other people's things and see that a lot of people overwrite with lyric, but in a song, you have to write a life story in 3.5 minutes. You know, you have to write a book in 3.5 minutes. In other words, you're singing a book, but you're singing a lyric song.
Right. Well, there's a guy by the name of Don Riggio. He lives in Las Vegas, even though he's a Bronx guy, and he wrote a book. It's going to be a trilogy now. He's on his second book. The first book was 7-inch vinyl, and it's about a fictitious group called the Duquesnes that started in the mid-50s, and it takes them all through their lives with their hits, and they started a record company, and then 10 years later they go through the divorces, and the group breaks up, and then 10 years after that they have a reunion, and they do Madison Square Garden. But it's all filled with, it's fiction, but it's filled with facts, so it ties you in. Now, the Duquesnes had this hit, imaginary hit. It was called Bouncing a Kiss Off the Moon. And I said to Don, there needs to be a tune. And he said, you need to write it. So I did. And I recorded it. It's on Amazon, you know, so anybody can have it for 99 cents. But the point is, I did it to be creative, and I did all the music myself, all the lyrics myself, and I had one of my friends who sings with the Del Vikings, who did Come Go With Me, that's Les Levine, and he did the bass parts. I actually sent the tune up to New York. He did the bass parts in New York and sent them back to me. So, you know, that's how it works these days. But yeah, there's some stuff that I can send you just to take a peek at, you know, to show you what I've been doing. And
I'm glad you're doing that because you're in your 60s, and that's right. Great too, because I'm a little older than you. But I don't know what I would do. I also learned, I used to sponsor golf pro years ago in the late 50s. And I'm certified to teach. I took lessons, and I'm certified to teach golf. And I'm a good teacher, but at my age, I don't play as well, but I'm still a good teacher, and I can teach golf.
Right.
And make money doing it. But what I do it for nothing. It show people how to hit a golf ball. So I have all kinds of things that I like to do. I went skydiving. After I was injured so badly, my wife and I both jumped out of airplanes. And the doctor said I wasn't supposed to step off a chair, but I said, well, you know, I'm going to do everything I can and have life experiences. So we've been out and got into a place where we took a fall day for them to get us ready, and we went out in tandem and jumped a couple of times. But
wow,
I think you cannot be afraid to take a chance, not a foolish chance, but you've got to remember that you can still be really active. A lot of older people just don't try anymore, but boy, I sure do, and I think you do too.
Well, yeah, you know, my wife, as I say, I got remarried, and I married the most wonderful girl, and she's beautiful, and she's, you know, inside and out, and she just showed me how to live again, you know, because I was single for a long time after my second divorce, and, you know, I had lost, unfortunately, my mother, my brother, and my father all within a short period of time, a little over a year, down here in Florida, three different illnesses. And after that, I moved down from Connecticut, and I just got into the fetal position for a while. Then they asked me to sing with the Mystics, and I did that, you know, because singing makes you feel good again. And you know, my wife and I have blended two different lives. We have five daughters between us. And, of course, you know, even the best of relationships take a lot of work. You know, you have to really tend to the garden every day, you know, and, yeah. And you know, and of course, I'm going to say it as corny as it is, happy wife, happy life.
my wife's a bartender now. She always likes to be with people. She teaches dance. She taught that lesson today. Uh-huh. She teaches dance during the day, and then sometimes she's working at a big casino. She's the top bartender there, one of the top bartenders there. She loves it because she gets to be around people all day. And I'm really thrilled for her because she doesn't have to work, but she does anyway. And she comes home and she's always happy. You know, she's never angry at anything except unless somebody gives her a bad time at work. But outside of that, I mean, we just call her Sunshine. Me and the kids call her Sunshine.
Wow.
Yeah. And so when you're happily married, you know, then life becomes, I just think that the Lord provided her for me. He just dropped her out of the sky.
Oh, yeah. No, I know what you mean. You know, when all the energy is going in the same direction, it makes it easier, you know. That's important, you know, that's important with a singing group, that's important with making a movie, it's important in relationships, you know, when the energy's going in one direction and the other direction, it makes it hard, you know?
The reason why people haven't heard about me for so long is because I'm really a hermit. I get up and I have my coffee and then I go to my computer and just a word process and sit down and work for a few hours on things that I'm writing. and then I go for a walk or whatever, but I don't go out. You know, I gave one of my jazz, I've got a jazz album too. Well, actually, I recorded 55 jazz tunes in 1964, and with a jazz piano players and Val Ernest's jazz trio, and that. We didn't use any music. I recorded 50 some songs in 3 days, like 20 songs a day. And that little jazz album is really cool. And one of my friends took it over to a jazz station here in Palm Desert, and he wouldn't play it. He said, "Jimmy Rogers can't sing jazz." And the guy said, "Well, you want to hear it?" He said, "Hey, Jimmy Rogers is a folk singer. He can't sing jazz, so he wouldn't even listen to it."
Well, he was, you know, you have these young guys now that are program directors and young guys, you know, and they don't really get it. As a matter of fact, radio is changing too. All of the radio personalities are going away and, you know, people, believe it or not, are turning to the internet to hear their oldies and their doo-wop. And, you know, there's more Jimmy Rogers being played on internet stations than there is on, terrestrial radio.
Well, satellite radio is really playing a lot of my stuff
now. Oh, yeah.
They play a lot. And, you know, I make money from satellite. I get checks from them. And I know they're off of. And my wife works at the same time. So we make money. I'm not rich, but I am in life.
Right.
I don't have millions of dollars. I drive a truck.
Right.
Which I love. And I have an old 65 Mustang convertible, which I work on all the time.
What color is it?
Well, yeah, it's white with a white, all the original stuff on it.
I remember the car. My first new car was my 65 GTO. I wish I had it today.
Well, you know, I had a little 44 coupe when I was in school. I paid $400 for it, but that little 44 coupe, which if I had one now, it'd be worth $40,000.
You bet.
I also had a 12 LaSalle for a while, and a bunch of us guys were drinking when I was in the service. We took it through a telephone pole and left it. So, but you know, God's good. All you gotta do is wake up every day and say, "Thank you, Jesus. I'm gonna go out here and do something. I don't know what, but that's what
well,
I do."
Maybe we can convince you somehow to do a show in Florida, even if it's as part of a big show, to come on and do your hits and whatever. If we could satisfy the conditions, do you think you would come?
Yes.
Okay.
Definitely would come.
Then I'm going to talk to a lot of people that put on shows, including myself, because I think the people in Florida would really, really come out in droves because, you know, where we are in Southern Florida, they're all baby boomers. And I know that every one of my friends that are in the country clubs down here in Boca and Lauderdale and Wellington, you know, they know the lyrics to every one of your hits. All you'd have to do is tap them on the shoulder and they'll sing the song back to you. So that,
well,
I know is a fact.
That's what I do in this show. I do some of them live, and they'll say, "Listen, I'm going to play a CD. I want you all to sing along with me." And they do. And I tell them when I'm going to play a CD because I can't sing that high note anymore.
I hear you.
But I go out in the audience and talk to them and walk around. And you know what? I can't get off the stage. I could be out there forever.
I can imagine.
Mike, I love it. Fact is, Florida's one of my favorite places anyway, so all you got to do is get a hold of me. We'll come.
Well, I'm going to ask you this question. What would you say to the millions of people that have loved you over the years and still play your songs and still have your records in their jukeboxes and cherish all of those words? What would you say to those people?
You know, I write back and forth to people all the time, and sometimes I get stuck when I get such sweet letters of what to say. But one guy asked me what music means to me, and I said music is life to me, to everybody. For children, I got in the hospitals and sang songs for children. I sang songs one time for a little girl who had meningitis and she was in a coma. And a week later, she came out of the coma and she was trying to sing. And she's been a friend of mine all of her life. She's been there since she. I would say this: music is like the wind. It's just there.
Wow.
And we all appreciate it. I do. And people who appreciate music are really healthy people.
Well.
And it doesn't have to be. I mean, it could even be. You know, I see some of the guys scatting music and rock and roll, and not the kind of rock and roll we were in, but for them, that's some kind of music. I don't particularly care for it.
Right.
But you see thousands of kids dancing, and they're not all in drugs, and they're not all sideways. They're just, I don't know what we would do without music. When President Kennedy was killed, I was in Taipei, Formosa. Doing shows for the armed forces, and when he was killed, we had to cancel the show and come back home. And when I got back to the United States, the disc jockeys were playing music all the time. They were talking about his death on the news, but the radio stations were just playing music, and you know, that was the smartest thing they could have done.
Music has always saved my life when ever anything has taken me, you know, down to the bottom. When my brother got sick, my brother died of AIDS. When he got sick, I wrote and recorded an album, and then I put a group together called Harmony Street, and we were together many years. We did some great things, but that grew out of the fact that I needed to shower myself with music, and I had stopped singing, but that was really the thing that saved my soul again. So you're absolutely right. Music is so universal, and it is from the heart and the soul. It comes from another place, you know.
Well, you know, I forget about the importance of it because I just, I'm not on purpose, but then when I get these letters, you know, you don't realize that people in the hospitals, older people that are, in, you know, can't get out and walk around and get beautiful letters from them. I don't know how many letters I get a year, but hundreds. And they all say the same thing. They all say, we love your music. And, you don't realize how much, you know, you're giving people. And because you don't think about it, you just go record songs and have a great time. But somewhere on the end of it, people are being made happy. That's important.
Absolutely. I want to ask you a question. A friend of mine told me to say hello to you. His name is John Bunnell, Johnny B. They call him. He comes from Waterbury, Connecticut. And he told me to say hello to you. He met you when you were in Connecticut at one point at a show.
Yeah, I think that was just recently. I think it was last year.
Yeah, Johnny B., John Bunnell, he's a sweet, sweet guy. He did a lot for me and my music when I had my group, because he's been probably doing this over, 35 years, and he's a sweet, sweet guy. And he just said to me, I know you're going to be interviewing Jimmy. Please say hello for me. So I'm saying hello to you from John Bunnell from Waterbury.
Well, I think, I can't remember exactly where we were. I met him from back with me, and there was quite a few people on this show.
Right.
But we did a show up there in a kind of a strange place, but it's like a theater, but it was only seated about 300-400 people.
Right.
And I probably met him there. I think it was about almost 2 years ago.
Yeah, I think he said it was about 2 years ago, exactly, right. Jimmy, more than any other interview I've ever done, I need to tell you that this was one of the sweetest, most heartfelt interviews that I've done with anybody in the business, and I am so glad that you are back and being creative and going forth. I know the words to every one of your hits, and it's just been a thrill an absolute thrill for me to spend time with you.
Thank you, Mike. Thank you so much.
Absolutely. And please, let's stay in touch.
Okay, good.
Okay, great.
Thank you very much.
All right, Jimmy. Thanks, man. Have a great night and a great new year.
You too.
Thanks.
Bye-bye now.
Bye.
Bye.
Time were not a moving thing, and I couldn't make it stay. This hour of love we share would always be. There'd be no coming day to shine a morning light, make us realize our night is over. When you walk away from me, there is no place to put my hand, except to shade my eyes against the sun that rises o'er the land. Watch you walk away, somehow I have to let you go. Now it's over. If you knew just how I really feel, you might be turning yet. There are so many times that people have to love and then forget. Though there might have been a way, I have to force myself to say it's over. I turn my back, turn my collar to the wind, move along in silence, trying not to think at all. I send my feet before me, walk the silent street before me. It's over. Time were not a moving thing, and I couldn't make it stay. This hour of love we share would always be. There'd be no coming day to shine a morning light, make us realize our night is over. It's over. Suits and petticoats, where have you gone? Turn around and she's tiny. Turn around and she's grown. Turn around, she's a young wife with babes of her own. Thank you. turn around and they're tiny. Turn around and they're grown. Turn around and they're gone. And you're there all.
Now that we are married, we must raise a family.
Remember what the wizard said.
said, remember what the wizard said.
All you have to do is snap your fingers, make a wish and snap your fingers. That's what you have to do. And your wishes will all come true. Today we're all together, a family of four. The girl and boy I wish for are playing on the floor. And one day when they're older, I'll hold them on my knee. And I'll tell them the secret that the wizard told me.
Tell them what the wizard said.
All you have to do is snap your fingers, make a wish and snap your fingers. That's what you have to do. And your wishes will all come true.
This is a beautiful thing. Do you listen to the words of a song? Listen carefully to this one because it's called The World I Used to Know. Ladies and gentlemen, Mr. Jimmie Rodgers.
World I used to know, someday some old familiar rain will come along and know my name. And then my shelter will be gone, and I'll have to move along. But till I do, I'll stay a while and track the hidden country of your smile. Someday the man I used to be will come along and call on me. And then because I'm just a man, you'll find my feet are made of sand. But till that time, I'll tell you lies and chart the hidden boundaries of your eyes. Someday the world I used to know will come along and bid me go. Then I'll be leaving you behind, for love is just a state of mind. But till that day I'll be your man and love away your troubles if I can. But till that day, I'll be your man and love away your troubles if I can. In the world I
welcome. You sit down, won't you? Jimmy, I have to confess, I very rarely ever listen to the words of a song. But I heard that one riding along in the car the other day, and it just flipped me. Did you write the song?
No, the song was written, words and music, by Rod McEwen.
I know him well. He's a very talented man.
Rod is a talented man. He started as an actor in the business, and then he has done a little bit of everything, but now he's functioning as a songwriter, working exclusively for a lot of talented people, and doing a wonderful job.
What is the import of words? Are they? Does it make any difference? Now, as I say, I'm not a words listener tour. Do you listen to the words always?
Yes. Well, I've made it a habit, Dick, as a singer, because naturally, as a performer, I think you're inclined to listen a little more closely than other people would. This particular song scared me, really, when I heard that we were going to release it, because I was a little bit afraid that people would not listen to the lyric, and this is the most important part of the song. But I'm awfully glad to see that people still have what we all rely upon, as we call it good taste, and they still have this, and that makes me very happy.
It's a most unique piece of material. Now, it's been turned around and incorporated into an album. Are you going to call the album after the record, or will it have a different title?
Well, the title is the title of the album now is Town and Country, and they're going to change the title of the album to The World I Used to Know, because, of course, because of the association of the single, and the record is incorporated in the album.
All right, let me switch now, totally far afield. You've done television, you've worked nightclubs, you make many recordings, personal appearances throughout the world. Have you made any movies?
I've made one picture. I'm with 20th Century Fox, and I made a picture a couple of years ago, and I'm making another one now. I'm leaving Thursday for Manila.
For where? Manila?
Manila, yes.
What, they make movies in Manila?
Well, they're making this one there. This is the title of this picture is Back Door to Hell, and it's a story about the Japanese-American and the Manila War, the Filipinos.
Are you going to do any singing in this thing?
No, I'm going to, I think I'm going to almost get killed, but I'm not going
I don't wish you any bad luck. When will it be released?
It'll probably be released at the end of the year.
Jimmy, I wish you good luck. You've got just about 2 minutes you can spend at our autograph table?
You bet I have.
We'll see you there. Thank you. Jimmy Rogers, ladies and gentlemen, join you at the autograph table right now.
Got a lot of tunes in my guitar. Pretty little tunes in my guitar. Got a lot of tunes in my guitar. But I haven't got a mate to sing to. Haven't got a mate to cling to. Haven't got a mate to serenade. About the moon, pretty little songs about the moon. Got a lot of songs that I can croon, but I haven't anyone to hum to, haven't anyone to strum to, haven't got a mate to serenade. Somewhere there must be someone.
Honeycomb.
If I could find that someone, my songs would have a home, and I would strum a lot of tunes on my guitar. Pretty little tunes on my guitar. Got a lot of tunes in my guitar. Wish I had a little maid to sing to, had a little maid to cling to, had a little maid to serenade. Wish I had a little maid to serenade.
I shall miss your sweet face and your smile. Just because you are weary and tired, you are changing your range for a while. I've been thinking a long time, my darling, sweet words you ever would say. Now, alas, must the fond hopes all vanish, for they say
I'm patient to bid us adieu.
I have promised you, darling, that never will the words from my lips cause you pain. And my life, it will be yours forever if you only would love me again. There never could be such a longing in the heart of a poor cowboy's breast as dwells in the heart you are breaking as I wade in my home in the west.
Then come sit here a while and be lost. Do not
just remember the Red River Valley and the cowboy who loves you so true.
You so
care makes a life worth living. Tender love and care, that's what I'll be giving. Every day, every night to you. When you're wrong, when you're right, when you're blue, I'll give tender love and care to you. I'll give tender love and care.
Tender love and care.
Tender love and care.
I will give you always.
Tender love and care.
Both in big and small
ways.
When you need me, you find me there. At your side, anytime, anywhere.
Given tender love and care to you.
Given tender love and care.
Gentle, sweet, and kind.
I will always treat you.
Gentle, sweet, and kind.
Every time I need you.
I will cheer you when you are low.
I will chase all your cares and woe.
Given tender love and care to you.
Given tender love and care.
Tender love and care.
Tender love and care.
Tender love and care.
Circle in a spiral, like a wheel within a wheel, never ending or beginning, on an ever spinning reel, like a snowball down a mountain or a carnival balloon, like a carousel that's turning, running rings around the moon, like a clock whose hands are sweeping past the minutes of its face, and the world is like an apple whirling silently in space, like the circles that you find in the windmills of your mind, like a tunnel that you follow to a tunnel of its own, down a hollow to a cavern
where the sun has never shone, like a door that keeps revolving in a half-forgotten dream, where the ripples from a pebble someone tosses in a stream, like a clock whose hands are sweeping past the minutes of its face, and the world is like an apple whirling silently in space, like the circles that you find in the windmills of your mind. Keys that jingle in your pocket, words that jangle in your head. Why did summer go so quickly? Was it something that you said? Lovers walk along a shore and leave their footprints in the sand. Is the sound of distant drumming just the fingers of your hand? Pictures hanging in the hallway and the fragments of a song. Half-remembered names and faces, but to whom do they belong? When you knew that it was over, you were suddenly aware that the autumn leaves were turning to the color of her hair, like a circle and a spiral, like a wheel within a wheel, never ending or beginning on an ever-spinning wheel, as the images unwind, like the circles that you find in the windmills of your mind. There's a story told of a very gentle boy and a girl who wore his ring through the wintry snow. The world they knew was warm, for their hearts were full of spring. As the days grew old and the nights passed into time, and the weeks and years took wing, gentle boy, tender girl, their love remained still young, for their hearts were full of spring. Then one day they died, and their graves were side by side on a hill where robins sing. And they say violets grew there the whole year round, for their hearts were full of spring. And they say violets grow there the whole year round, for their hearts were full. Holy infant, so tender and mild, sleep in heavenly peace, sleep in silent night, holy night, shepherds quake at the sight, glory stream from heaven. Time on Harmony Street.